Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. It's another episode. It's Movember. I'm doing like 8 episodes this month. Patrick Brady fixed the audio. That's right, because that's one of the credits. Mike Rickberg just sang that song. He composed that song and sang it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. He will sing again at the end of the program. Now, the website being done by Vilmos. He does JackieCation.com, and he could do yours if you want. HiredGunCoding.com, if you go to that and check out his website, Making Skills. Knock yourselves out. This month is November. November and December, I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest. Donate. There's 10 other months that you can donate to the Dork Forest. $10 a month gives me $100 a year from everybody. That would be great. But in November, you should find a food bank in your local area, because what the heck? A couple of months a year, you could give them $10 a month, maybe, or whatever you have. If you Google the words food bank and then the name of your town, the one will show up. Doesn't matter where you are. You could be in Nairobi, and I bet you there's a food bank, and you could help them out. Anyway, so that's that. If you do want to get a T-shirt or a CD or a DVD, that's available at JackieCation.com in the store. So my new CD and DVD, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux, are available there. You can also go to All Things Records, allthingscomedy.com/JackieCation, to download a $5 version of the video. Instead of buying the DVD, you can just get it for $5 download. And All Things Comedy, by the way, .com, they're making a great space for people to record podcasts, for comics to record their podcasts. I do it in my living room, but it's going to be a really nice space. And All Things Comedy is looking for a $5 donation from everybody. And then that'll pay for it. That'll do all the equipment and everything. And it's the Bill Burr, Al Madrigal, podcast network. And there's a lot of great podcasts on there, including Aaron Foley and Eddie Pepitone and Baron Vaughn and 1,000 others that I'm spacing out. Tom Papa. That I'm spacing at this time, but they're very good. And so if you're always looking for new podcasts, go to allthingscomedy.com and browse their pods. The other way you can help the show, if you want, as we go into the holiday season, you can use the Amazon banner on JackieCation.com. There's a white banner, sort of the right-hand side, and it's just a portal back into Amazon, and then you order normal, and then I get a kickback. I get a little taste of whatever from Amazon. And we all order from them, so if you're going to order from them and you're not using somebody else's portal, use my portal. What the heck? JackieCation.com. Other than that, I think that is it. There's going to be a nice ad in a second for Bob Calhoun's book. And this is a great episode, but it comes out November 21st. Happy Thanksgiving if you enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. If you have a war on Thanksgiving. Weird, I say. But I'm going to be headlining in Los Angeles at Flappers Burbank, and that is Friday the 28th and 29th. And then in December, I'm the first weekend of December, the 4th through the 7th, I'm with Brian Regan all over the coast of California, San Luis Obispo, Santa Rosa, Temecula, and Bakersfield. And then the following week, I'm in Michigan in Ann Arbor, and then I'm in Aspen, Colorado, December 20th. So these things are upcoming. Anyway, let's get into the show. It's a good one. It's a really good one. Enjoy. Shattering conventions, shattering conventions, shattering, shattering. Hey, I sang. It's Jackie Cation. Shattering conventions, commerce, cosplay, and conflict on the expo floor by Bob Calhoun is this month's sponsor. It's a hilarious and disturbing book. Friend of the show, conventions dork, Bob Calhoun, has been on the show, previous episode. He goes to all kinds of different conventions, trade shows, and expos, and writes about it in Shattering Conventions. But he doesn't just go to Comic-Con and Star Trek conventions. He goes to a gun show, a livestock show, a Republican convention, a conspiracy convention. I remember being slightly worried when he went to that one. And even a Bigfoot Hunter Con. There's all kinds of crazy and wrong in this book, and it's not always where you expect to find it. Not only have I read this book, I endorsed it with a blurb on the back cover, and I recommend it to all Rangers of the Dork Forest and spooky reading girls within the sound of my voice. The book is Shattering Conventions, Commerce, Cosplay, and Conflict on the Expo Floor by Bob Calhoun. It's available in ebook and paperback from Amazon.com and other fine booksellers. For more on the book, go to shatteringconventions.com. It's a really good book. You should get it. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest, sitting in my living room. Hooray. Jimmy Pardo, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jackie. It's good to be back.
At Jimmy Pardo on the Twitter, and never not funny, hugely popular. 6 months, just found out 6 months longer than the Dork Forest. You've been in the business, ground floor, like plastics. You got in the ground floor of podcasting before me.
March 2006.
Oh, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
And mine, September 2006.
Yeah, so. I got in. I heard you were thinking about it. And I said, she will not beat me to the punch on podcasting.
How did you hear about it? Because I heard about it at an open mic.
About what? About podcasting?
Podcasting.
Matt Belknap was doing a podcast called AST Radio.
Before both of us?
Yeah. Yeah.
Matt Belknap. Ground. That's
well, and,
ground.
And, of course,
floor.
Ricky Gervais was doing it before us.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I don't care about Ricky Gervais.
Well, that's
I don't know that guy.
That's how I knew what a podcast was, because of Ricky.
Okay.
And then Matt came to my house. He was doing this AST Radio. And it really was, I don't even know if it was called a podcast yet, but he would like put it up on aspecialthing.com.
Okay.
Interviewing comedians.
Okay.
And then, pardon me, after he did mine, he walked, he goes, I think I'd have more fun producing a show for you.
Okay.
And so then we tried to turn my talk show at the UCB into a podcast.
Right.
And then we ended up just doing that like this. We ended up being at my house across the dining room table for a year with Mike Schmidt, and then Mike left the show.
Right.
And we've been going ever since.
Ever since. This is a real nice card table. That's what we're working on here.
This is a nice table.
This is a real nice – this folds up. Goes right behind that door.
Folds it up. You put it out of the way.
Out of the way. Regular social things happen in this living room when I'm not recording the door.
I've been in this living room for social events.
That's right. We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again. I don't know when, but one day we're going to have another social event. I'm in favor of it. So this will be available to the people. I like to call it dropped. Some people make fun of me. I don't know why. It's not an album, but I mean, that's what happens is I drop it into the internet and the internet puts it back out.
I don't drop it. I upload it.
Oh, do you upload
it? Well, I don't.
No.
I'm the talent.
And Groundhog Day. Did he just refer to himself as the talent?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great one of my favorite lines. November 21st, which is weird because one week later, the Pardcastathon.
The day after Thanksgiving, Pardcastathon, it goes
Friday.
From noon to midnight
over at UCB.
Pacific time.
At
the Acme Theater.
Oh, going to be at the
La Brea.
Acme on
but
La Brea.
More importantly, it streams live at nevernotfunny.com.
Okay.
And it's a telethon to raise money for Smile Train. So if you can give money, each surgery only costs $250 and takes 45 minutes to change a child's life.
Right.
But donate a dollar, donate $5, donate as much as you can.
Yeah, and fix cleft palates all over the world.
It's a great organization. I'm proud to be associated with them, and we have raised close to $500,000 for them.
That's amazing.
From my stupid little podcast.
See? Helper Magoo. That's you.
No.
No?
Nope.
No?
No, nobody's ever referred to me as that, but I...
I will. Welcome to the Dork Forest.
I'm Helper Magoo.
Helper Magoo. I'm Chatty Magoo. My sister, Bossy Magoo.
Yeah? What about Phil?
Phil Cation?
Yeah.
Phil Cation? Kind of a crier Magoo.
Oh.
That guy, Emo Magoo. Guess what? He, at the coffee shop, he's got some buddies listening to the Dork Forest. Hey, everybody over at the coffee shop in Minneapolis, which is called Caffetto. Tell Phil that I call him Emo Magoo, if you would.
Phil doesn't listen, but his friends do.
Yeah.
Aren't you a fan of that? I like when I have people like my cousins will go, yeah, my best friend thinks you got the greatest podcast. What the? Even that recommendation? You don't listen?
Nothing. I've had more than three members of my immediate family say to me, you know, I don't really like stand-up comedy.
Hmm.
But, you know, I wish you the best of luck, at which point I want to say, you know, I don't really like money laundering, but whatever you do for a living is awesome. So,
good.
Jimmy Pardo, let's get into this. The band Chicago.
You
said you could dork out about the band Chicago.
Well, I mean, are
they from Chicago?
Yeah, they're, yeah, of course they are.
Well, they could have been from Milwaukee. I don't know.
Well, no, they're from Chicago.
They're from Chicagoland? Are they white?
Just, my God.
What? I don't know anything about
a lot of
Chicago.
Questions. These are a lot of questions. Yeah, they started in the late 60s. They were called the Chicago Transit Authority.
Really?
And then I believe the mayor threatened to sue them if they didn't change their name.
Daly.
Was that Mayor Daly in the late 60s?
That would have been. There was some graft.
Richard J. Daly.
Yeah, that sounds right. Dick Daly.
And he, so then they changed their name too. And I think it's in the first album in the liner notes. So know them simply as Chicago. And I always, whenever I read that, I think it's in the first, the liner notes of the gatefold of CTA, which is the name of the first album.
Okay.
Which I want to say came out in 67. Is that what you have down there?
I have Chicago Transit Authority, 1969.
69, huh?
Yeah. And then Chicago 2, 1970.
70, yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought it was, maybe they got together in 67. And then the album came out in 69.
That makes sense. You got to get a catalog before you start
recording.
Well,
you got to play around a little
bit.
Right,
right. You're doing covers until then.
They were doing covers at Barnaby's on State. It was on State Street, a place called Barnaby's in Chicago.
How awesome would it have been to see something?
Well, I would have been one,
right,
so I may not
have
appreciated it.
No, you might
have been loud.
Would have been really loud, a lot of trumpets.
They were called the Big Thing. Is what they were called then.
Okay.
And then they changed their name to CTA.
Okay.
And then
Chicago, just straight
and
up
then
Chicago.
Simply
in
Chicago.
70. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then.
And who's in the band? How many
now
members
or
in the
then?
Band? Then.
Well, then you had the three horns. You had Jimmy Panko on trombone.
Okay.
Who lives right over here in Calabasas?
Really?
Yeah. And
right.
That's what he said. I've met him a couple times.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he has been nothing but a nice man. Recognized my name from television, thought I was a VO guy.
Okay.
And then
okay.
He finally figured out that I'm a comedian. I don't know if he really figured it out, but he's always kind and nice. And he always goes, "Nick, we're living the dream. Are you putting food on the plate?
Yeah.
We're doing it.
That's it. We're doing it.
We're doing our dream."
He's, you know what? That is the best attitude ever.
It is. And he goes, look at me. I'm 70 years old. I'm still doing this.
He's still playing a trombone.
Trombone.
In a band.
And still looks.
Oh,
he was the sexy one in the band.
Oh, was he? Panko?
He would wear a leather vest on stage back in the 70s
mm-hmm,
with
mm-hmm.
nothing.
No shirt.
No shirt.
Oh, that is a look.
And even as a straight white man, I would go, yeah, of course. Of course that's what you're wearing. You look great. With a 70s beard and then the hair. But I would say to him, I go, Jimmy, where do you? I go, do you live in Nashville with the other? No, I'm right over here in Calabasas. And then
next to the Kardashians, through that gated thing.
Yes,
yeah.
Of course, it's in the money area.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, because hopefully he's still getting royalties.
He wrote, and I don't know how linear you want to go with this, how timeline, but he wrote Make Me Smile. He wrote Color My World. He wrote Just You and Me. So he is making
bank.
A gazillion dollars.
Right, right. It keeps coming.
So he's on trombone. This is back again, the original CTA.
Okay.
Jimmy Panko on trombone. Lee Locknin on trumpet.
Okay.
Walter Perizzator on woodwinds.
Okay.
Robert Lamb on keyboard and vocal. Peter Cetera on bass and vocal.
He's the only one I've ever heard of.
Terry Kath on lead guitar and vocal.
Okay.
And Danny Serafin.
Okay.
On drums.
Okay.
Do you want me to then bore you?
What is that, six people?
That's seven.
Seven people.
That's your original seven.
So they go to do a gig. They get $100. Everybody gets $9.
They get $9.
Right.
But they're living the dream.
They're living the dream.
Putting food on the plate.
Maybe they got free food.
I would imagine Barnaby's gave them something.
Right, right. They got a sandwich or something in the beginning of it all. But, yeah, so they're the core. They're the core.
They're
group.
The core. And then in around 76, 77, might have even been 75, a guy named Lauder de Oliveira. Joined on percussion. Brazilian gentleman.
Oh, more.
Yeah, more, you know.
Yeah.
Lauder de Oliveira.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1978, mm-hmm. In January, I believe it is, of 1978, Terry Kath took his life accidentally.
Accidentally?
Yes.
OD?
No, he was showing, I can't pull the name right now, a band tech, Donnie something.
Okay.
I think it was Donnie something. He was showing a band tech a gun, and it was loaded, and he shot himself in the head.
Wow.
There is, of course, conspiracies.
Oh, sure. On sure. Whether... right. Because that's that guy. Murder conspiracies or something.
But,
right?
But he was not happy. He was depressed. One could believe it, but I'm thinking...
Whenever anyone collects guns, remember Freddie Prinze?
Yeah.
The 70s?
Sure.
Yeah, that was a guy who collected some guns, and things weren't going well.
Looking good.
Looking good. sure.
So Terry passes away. They replace him with a guy named Donnie Dacus, who went by the nickname of Hotlicks. Donnie Hotlicks Dacus.
That's guitar.
On guitar. And uh-huh. He was also, before that, he was with Stephen Stills, and he was also in the movie Hair.
Oh, was he?
And he was as Don Dacus.
As one of the, as sort of an ensemble-y guy?
Just one of the cast. Yeah, yeah, one of the stars. You know, it was Treat Williams.
Right.
Beverly D'Angelo and Don Dacus.
Oh, okay.
Were the three big stars.
Okay.
Then Don joined Chicago. He was there for Hot Streets and 13.
Okay.
Then they got rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
A guy by the name of Chris Pinnock joined on guitar.
Yeah.
He was there until Cetera left in 85. And when Peter left in 85, a guy named Jason Scheff replaced Peter, and a guy named Dwayne Bailey replaced Chris Pinnock.
Wow.
Then Dwayne Bailey was there, I want to say, till 92.
What?
I'm sorry, in 1990, Danny Seraphin was fired.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Go back.
Go back.
In 1982, Bill Champlin joined on guitar, vocal, and keyboard.
Okay.
Then in 1990, Danny Seraphin was fired from drums. A guy named Tristan Bowden joined on drums. And then
this
in 19...
This band has employed more people.
Yes, I played for them for about a month and a half. I was on timpani. Oh, Law Dario Oliveira left in 82.
He left in 82. He took his conga and that ratchet.
Yeah. Took that back.
Yeah.
Took those away. Back to Brazil. Tristan Bowden joined on drums. In 1992, Dwayne Bailey was fired and replaced by Keith Howland. And that's been the band ever since. They now have a guy, Walfredo Reyes, on percussion.
Okay.
Jason Scheff, again, replaced Peter Cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you still have four original.
Four original guys.
Three horns.
That's huge, actually, from 1969.
Yeah.
That's an amazing kind of thing, because aren't there bands that there's one guy left?
Well, some would say that's Chicago, too, though.
You
know, like, because there were seven.
Right.
To go and see them, and there's only four. And sometimes, because these guys are getting up there in age, sometimes you can go see them, and it'll be...
just two of the four.
Two of the four.
Right.
Or one of the four. Like, sometimes there's only one horn player, two. The other guys aren't there.
Right, because
Robert
they had to
Lamb
lie
is
down.
Always there.
Robert Lamb's always there.
Yeah.
Now, is he one of the vocal guys?
He is, and he wrote Beginnings. Does anybody know what time it is? 25 or 6 to 4, Saturday in the Park.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hits.
I was listening last night to one of the greatest hits, I think from 75.
Yeah, Chicago 9.
Chicago 9. That's what I was listening to that when I was like, let's get into it. See if I know any of these songs.
You knew them all.
I know them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know almost every single song that is, yeah.
I'm not a big, like if somebody says, what album do I get in on? What album, if I don't know anything about Chicago, what album would I ever get in on?
Yeah.
I never like to suggest, get the greatest hits. But Chicago 9 is a great way to wet your whistle.
Right.
To then see if you want to journey further into getting... Right. Earlier albums.
Because it's a lot of different kinds of albums, but there is a definite through line to that thing. And this was the time, I believe, I'd love talking about music. I don't know a great deal about it, but I like when we pick a band.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I can really, there was a great episode about ska. I had Brandy Posey on. I got to learn about ska.
Wow. And you talked for more than 15 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's a lover of the ska.
I get it.
She went into it. She got into it and she held forth.
I don't want that.
You don't want those. If you're allergic to nuts, by the way, there's nuts in these cashews.
Oh, so, no.
I know it. You've been eating them for about 12 minutes.
you know what? I wanted the cashew. And then I realized nobody wants to hear me.
One guy really doesn't. One guy emails me and he's like, why is that happening? And I'm like, well, don't worry about it. It's free.
And we're human beings and maybe we don't want to pass out.
Right. There has to be some eating sometimes. But
yes,
horns. I love a band that has a band.
Yeah.
I myself do not enjoy jazz.
You don't like Miles Davis.
I saw Miles Davis live once, and it was cool. But that's all it was.
That's a great – I think that's one of those where you could – like you just said, that's all it was. You check it off, and you can tell people, I saw Miles Davis.
I saw Miles Davis once. It was neat.
It's like I saw Bob Dylan once. I've actually seen him more than once, but right. the first time I saw him was not until maybe 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I remember going, well, I can check that off.
Right.
I can now say I saw Bob Dylan. It wasn't good. It wasn't entertaining, but I saw the legend.
Right, right. And it was, I think Dana Gould tells that story about seeing Sinatra, and he saw Sinatra, and he couldn't, Frank Sinatra was genuinely old and couldn't remember the lyrics to his own songs. So all you can do in that situation is tick it off.
Right.
But with what's his name, Bob Dylan, I don't understand what he's saying.
Ever.
So I love it when other people cover Bob Dylan, because I like the songs, but I like to hear the words.
I like if you buy the two, if you buy the essential Bob Dylan,
yeah,
where you know there's some production value and stuff, and you can understand what he's saying.
Somebody cleaned it up.
There's not a clunk around there.
I mean, there you go.
It's really, really great.
Right, and I, you know, I am not to say anything. My brother Phil, that's my brother Phil.
Yeah,
big fan of Leonard Cohen, big fan of Bob Dylan. Those are his twos.
Wow.
And so that's a different. It's a different guy than you.
Yeah.
That isn't you. That you're a Chicago guy.
I like Bob Dylan.
Right.
Leonard Cohen.
Not at all. No. Not as much. I like Leonard Cohen. He kind of it's gravelly, but again, I like it when other people cover it because then I can understand what's being said.
Yeah. And what was his big hit?
Everybody Knows. You remember Everybody Knows? Concrete Blonde did it in Pump Up the Volume.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that. The River Phoenix film.
That was not. Christian Slater.
Christian Slater, rather. It was on there MCA Records.
Right. It was, I just watched it about 3 weeks ago. I decided to put in some crap. I was like, I'm watching some Craptastic. 2 weeks notice, music and lyrics, Pump Up the Volume, Groundhog Day.
I'm going to say Pump Up the Volume didn't hold up at all.
It does. It does hold
really?
Up. Really? Weirdly enough, holds up.
Pirate radio. In a basement.
In a basement, and then driving around in a Jeep with like a ham radio broadcasting.
Uh-huh.
Work like a charm.
All right.
And PG, weirdly enough, back in those days, meant free boobs.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, that's weird, right? So there's some, so gentlemen, ladies, everybody who's into free boobs that's listening out there, Rangers, get out there, rent, Pump Up the Volume. Might be available streaming.
Are we calling that 89 or 90? What year did that movie come out?
I think 89, 90. What happens sometimes in the Dork Forest is that my phone rings and then I got to go hang up on somebody. So tell a story about either a movie that you love or a Chicago.
Well, I saw Chicago. The very first time I saw Chicago was 1982. No, abort. 1981. I saw my friend Gary Shera. Gary is, ended up moving to Nashville and was a touring musician and wrote some songs and had some hits.
Yeah.
And, he was on tour with some famous artists, playing keyboards and a backup vocalist.
Right.
Really talented guy who I went to high school with. And, I went with him to see my first, Chicago show, and we sat in the front row.
Where'd you go? What theater?
At Chicago Fest. So it was an outdoor. Chicago Fest used to be a once a year, kind of like Milwaukee
like
Fest.
Like Summer Fest.
Yeah, same.
Okay.
Summer Fest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So it was an outside venue.
Yes.
And was it just them?
Well, it was.
Who opened for them?
Lee Ritenour.
Oh, that's awesome.
Jazz guitarist Lee Ritenour.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I then got on board with, and then I've since gone away from. But
right.
At the time, I, you know.
Oh, good.
Because I don't, you know, before that, I'd seen Kiss, you know. And
right.
And so, like, to see another artist live and see Lee Ritenour, it was kind of like, well, now I'm a big Lee Ritenour fan.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's some nostalgia there listening to that album that was out in 81.
Right.
And we went to the afternoon, we went to the matinee show. Because there was two shows, because it was a Chicago Fest.
Right.
And we got there early, because that's what Gary and his friends wanted to do. And we sat, like I say, in the front row.
Front row.
And I knew Chicago because my dad is a huge Chicago fan.
Okay.
You know, not so much anymore. But
right.
At the time.
He was like, this is a great band.
Yeah. And he would play them all the time in the, you know, in the car.
Right.
Or, you know, probably had 8 tracks he would play. Or
sure.
He'd play the vinyl.
Ka-chunk.
And so I knew the hits.
Mm-hmm.
The show that I saw in 81 was one of maybe 3 shows Chicago did the entire year.
Okay.
And it's a set list that if I saw that set list today, I would go, that's the best set list in the world.
Yeah.
At the time, I was thinking, I don't know any of these songs.
Oh, right.
They better play a couple of hits here. Because
right.
It was like this really weird, kind of self-indulgent set.
Yeah.
Very fan-friendly set, casual fan, not so much.
Yeah.
Because
it was deep cuts.
Deep cuts, a song called Mother, a song called Doing Business that wasn't released on an album until the 2000s when it was a bonus track.
Oh, really?
Yeah. maybe the 90s, it was on a box set.
Okay.
But,
but definitely like 10 years, 12 years after it had been.
Oh, 20 minimum. Let's see, if I saw him 81.
They performed it 1,000 times and nothing.
Doing business. Doing business.
All right.
Every mama. And here's the deal. Peter Cetera, like when they did do a hit, like they did Robert Land, like Saturday in the Park, which they may have opened with.
Okay.
Because it was a Saturday in the Park.
Oh, right.
I think it was August 1st of 1981.
Okay.
And they said, that's Bobby Lamb. That's Bobby Lamb. And I then spent, because my OCD head couldn't get comfortable.
Yep.
Is it Bob Elam? Is it Bobby Lamb?
Right.
What? So
you didn't know what his name was.
I didn't know his name.
So you sat in the front row. And that's the committee meeting that you were holding on
in my head, going, well, what is that? And then, so then they finally do another couple songs. And then Peter Cetera says, well, let me introduce everybody. Let's introduce the band. On drums, that's Danny. Ah, you know who everybody is. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I just at least say that man's name.
One more time. One more time.
Yeah.
Robert E. Lamb.
Yeah,
is that his name?
It took me until I got home and looked at the album.
What is it?
It's Robert Lamb.
It is Robert Lamb.
Robert
Bob
Lamb.
Lamb. Bobby.
And he went
Lamb.
As Bobby in the 80s for, and he hates it now.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. In fact, I saw him recently at the Saban here in L.A., and some guy, Robert was up there talking, and some guy said, I love you, Bobby. And he goes, I love you too, sir, but I haven't been Bobby for 20 years. Right. But with venom.
Like serious rage.
Like I'm not.
I am not a bartender. Don't call me Bobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he went enough. By Bobby. It was in the albums.
You right.
Know, keyboard and vocal, Bobby Lamb.
Yep.
But it was a time of his life that I guess he chooses to forget because of where
it's
he was.
It's weird that he kept the same job because it's going to be hard to forget that. And it'd be like if I wanted to start pronouncing my name Cashian because that's what a lot of my siblings have done it now. They're ethnic.
Because of the Kardashians?
No, because the Archbishop of the East Coast Archbishop told my sister that it was actually pronounced Cashian or Cashian or whatever the fuck it is. Instead of Cation, which is what my father has always pronounced it as.
And
so three of my siblings out of the six of us are currently repronouncing their name something weird. And I'm like, do whatever you want.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down.
Thumbs down,
thumbs
Bobby
down,
Lamb.
You three. But I get Bobby. I was Jim for a while, and
yep.
So I get that you go through the phases, and you want, you know, it's
yeah.
like that's
you
not
want to
who
be called Thomas, or you want to be
right.
Right. You're like Tommy, Tom, whatever.
Yeah.
TJ.
I think it was a drug-addled part of his life that
right.
he kind of wants to forget.
So he wants to mature his way out of
yeah.
it. And so he's like, well, no, I'm past that.
And
so.
He's also 70. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, they're 70 years old now, this band.
Are they really?
Yeah, the originals.
It makes perfect sense. It makes, I mean, 1969, they were probably 20.
Yeah.
Well, my, he's 50 years old.
My dad was born in 43, and most of these guys
were
born.
He was in the
born,
war then, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. He fought for this country.
He fought for this country
he's a
in
patriot.
1943.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they sent him off as an infant.
I used to do that joke about me going to Vietnam. My parents sent me to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I was three, but I went.
You know, what's weird is I used to, because I have a buddy who was in Ho Chi Minh City in 1975 when the regime fell, because his dad was in the diplomatic corps. And I said, were you on the Ho Chi Minh Trail and your bike fell over? Because he would have been seven, I think, at the time. Or something, or 10. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great stories.
They
anyway,
sure
let's
are.
Keep going.
Good stuff, war.
Good stuff, war.
They were born right around the same time as my dad, most of the originals.
Oh, okay.
Around 43, 44.
Okay.
And so they're seven. They're 70.
They're 70 years old.
71.
And they're still playing. They're still playing out.
Yes.
And, you know, mixed, you know, as much as they can. But I digressed. I weeded this off, this whole, the idea of the horns.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like big band.
Okay.
I like big band music and I like, rock. And I think Chicago is a nice mix of the two of them.
Yes, of course. They're yeah. rock and roll with horns. That's how they describe themselves.
Is that how? Okay.
And, you know, I mean, that's how they describe themselves now and in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, of course, they went through the phase that everybody did where everybody wanted to be, you know, have a Diane Warren hit. And, you know.
What is that? What
you
is
know,
a
power ballad.
Oh, okay.
You
yeah.
know, so, you know, they had Hard to Say I'm Sorry in 82. You're the Inspiration.
I think I tried to roller skate backwards to both of those.
I would imagine that was right in that right in that time frame.
That would have been the one.
You know, what people call the, you know, the downfall of Chicago, which, you know, those albums, if you're not a power ballad guy, you know, there's other great songs on Chicago 16, 17, 18, and 19.
Okay. But that was the stuff that people were putting.
That was the norm. I mean, that was what everybody was doing. It was, you know, every artist was doing that. Now, some could say, well, stay true to who you are. Don't try to have a hit.
Right.
But who the fuck doesn't want a hit? Pardon my language.
Right, you know, I mean, people want a hit.
You want a hit.
Yeah.
And this is a band, Chicago, that, you know, they at one time, I think they had four albums in the top 10.
Wow.
And like everything was Chicago.
So there were only other six other albums. Right.
In the top, that's what I'm saying. Like, so I think Chicago 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, like they all went to number one.
Okay.
And then they completely fell off the, you know, they were nothing.
Right.
And then they came back in 82 with Hard to Say I'm Sorry. And it's like, well, it's a different time, it's different music. We're going to make hits.
Right, right. And so we're going to do this. Yeah, I think the first time I heard of Chicago was on Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
And because they were hits and he would count down the top 40.
Sure.
And it was always, he would talk over the beginning of the song. It's my least favorite thing is to talk over the beginning or the end of the song where I was like, well, wait, the song's begun.
That's still part of the song, guys.
I'd like to hear the beginning of the song.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. And it was, but I do like them. There's all of that stuff where are there other bands that, I mean, they were not unique in that.
Well, there was Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. My Chicago accent. Blood, Sweat, and Tears. who were produced by the same guy, James Gershio.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's one more from that time that I can't pull right now. I mean, well, Ides of March. Some could argue the Ides of March had some horns in them. They did the song Vehicle.
Okay.
I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you want to go.
Right. Well, because last night when I was listening to the greatest hits, there was a flute. I don't know who was playing a flute.
That's Walt Perezetta on woodwinds.
Okay. Oh, he did all the woodwinds.
Yeah, saxophone, oboe, clarinet, flute.
I didn't remember that there was any flute. I mean,
My World.
Okay, because I was thinking it was all Jethro Tull for flute.
Aha!
That's what I was thinking it had to be. And it wasn't, you know, because I think of Jethro Tull as more of like acid rock. I don't even know if that's
It's prog rock.
Prog rock.
Yeah.
Is Chicago considered prog rock?
No, they're called probably jazz fusion, probably.
Okay.
You know, that's the weird thing. I think that's part of the problem that they had is that you didn't know how to describe them.
Because somebody might have called them prog rock.
Maybe.
And they would have been, sure.
I mean, it's not as moody as prog. Although when they first started, you know, they did, you know, Robert Lamb wrote, you know, Dialogue or, you know, State of the Union off Chicago 5 and, or even stuff on Chicago 3, you know, again, Mother, which is about Mother Earth.
Okay.
And, Flight 602, is it?
Okay.
But all like Vietnam War,
era.
They had a song for Richard and his friends, basically telling Richard Nixon to get out of here.
Oh, really?
We're sick of your shit.
Okay. To a nice beat.
Some would argue that may not be a nice beat on the song for Richard and his friends.
Okay.
I think it's a pretty, you gotta be a big fan to dig that.
Okay.
But they, you know, they were very,
like, just the story they're telling, is it, sometimes, it's like some of the lyrics I was listening to, they were kind of sad.
Well, it depends what song.
Right, because there was a lot of they do a lot of love songs.
Well, they did even back then. See, that's what's funny. You say that, Jackie. It's funny you're saying that, Jackie. Point of order, dork.
Please do.
Sweet Jesus. Everybody blames Cetera and, you know, If You Leave Me Now in 1976 for, well, that's where they sold out. That's where they became a pussy man. It's like, well, Just You and Me is a love song. You know, Color My World off Chicago 2 is a love song.
Right.
Now, yes, it has some unique time
changes and stuff.
Structure. And, like, there's a great soprano saxophone solo in the middle of Just You and Me.
Okay.
Which may not have happened in the 80s, but it would have been a horrible synthesizer.
Right.
That's kind of who they were. They were a mixture of this rock and roll with horns, and then they would do a ballad.
Yeah.
And back to back, and it was a time where nobody thought it was weird. Like, even Zeppelin would do Going to California after Black Dog. You know what I mean? It's like two different, it's the same band. They still have the same vibe.
Same with Wings. I mean, Wings had like,
But some could argue that Paul McCartney is just a sappy jackass and that the rock and roll songs are the
Or the or oh
the rarity, the exception.
Oh, okay.
I'm not that guy, but some would.
Okay, yeah. It's but I thought that, like, because I only have hits in history, the Wings.
That's all you need.
Which is, it is all you need, because it's a, like, it's got to be 50 songs.
I know, it's got everything, right.
So some of them are really sappy, and some of them are.
Well, a Jet.
Yeah.
Band on the Run is in my top five favorite songs of all time.
That seems to be three different songs, is it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't it? Doesn't it turn in? It just keeps going.
And then, yeah. Band on.
Right. Seriously, it goes from, it's long.
Yeah.
It changes major time code. Time code?
That can't be it.
That's not what I'm, time to 4/4 to 6/8 or whatever.
What is that called? Because that's what I'm trying, that's the same thing I'm trying to think of too.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
and I was happy when you said time change. I just went along with it.
Yeah.
It's not what I meant, but right. It was close enough. Like
it's
a bullseye.
Close as I can come to. Somebody.
Time.
I'm sure. Someone. Ross Whitman. You out there? Yelling at the iPod,
Ross? Yeah,
but
I'm this nerd that's on here to talk about music, and I can't think of, like, the most.
But I can't remember the name of it.
I'm a fan. I'm not a musician.
That's it. Do you play an instrument?
No.
Did you ever play an instrument?
I took guitar lessons.
Okay.
I admit that I'm that asshole that thinks.
Oh, at the party?
I can't. No. Oh, okay. No, that guy's another.
You're not that asshole.
I'm the guy who, if I'm not playing after three lessons.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm not. This ain't for me.
Right.
Like, I literally think I should get those tapes from Esteban.
Right.
On an infomercial, learn how to play guitar in 6 hours.
And then all of a sudden you're Jimmy Licks.
I'm Hot Licks Pardo.
Hot Licks Pardo.
True or false, Jackie?
Yeah.
I was in a band in high school called Rainbow Bridge. And
I want it to be true.
I would jokingly say, I would introduce the band and say, and I'm Jimmy Hot Licks Pardo.
Wow. That feels true.
No, it's false.
That is false.
Of course it's true.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of sad songs, like Color. Yeah. Like we say, Color My World, Just You and Me. But those are really the only, Wishing You Were Here is on the greatest hits.
Okay.
But for the most part, that first greatest hits, I mean, you know, Beginnings is on there, which is in my top five favorite songs of all time.
Okay.
It's Only the Beginning, that one.
Okay.
25 or 64 is on there. That's a rock song with horns.
Yep.
Let's see, Just You and Me is on there. Wishing You Were Here. Call on Me is on there.
Okay.
Call on me, Cass.
Okay, so not Blondie.
No.
Not the, that's a different song entirely.
How many am I up to? What did I do? Let me see if I can name the songs on the greatest hits.
Okay.
Beginnings, 25 or 64. Color My World, Just You and Me, Make Me Smile.
Okay.
Wishing You Were Here. Call on Me. Did I ever say Call on Me?
I don't think so.
I don't know what I've done now.
Right now. Now it's a blur. That's seven.
What are these other three? Oh, Saturday in the Park.
Okay.
Does anybody know what time it is?
Okay.
I've been searching so long.
And I'm inside. Yeah.
So long.
I like all that. I like all of that, and I like, because for me, in high school, it isn't right. I was a big Billy Joel fan.
Why is that not right?
Because the mocking over the last 37,000 years that I've received.
You know what's interesting, Jackie, about that, is I am very outspoken, and I've come around. I want to be very clear.
Okay.
I am outspoken on my hatred of Billy Joel.
Oh, you're on record?
I am on every record possible on how I will punch him in his scraggly bearded face. And that he's horrible.
But Christy Brinkley cleaned him up.
Yeah, those songs were
bought
horrible.
Her a turtleneck. Yeah, they were the worst. That was the worst year.
But all that said, I've come
full circle.
I still hate him. I've gone a complete 180.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah, 360 is full circle.
Yep.
I admit that I'm wrong. It turns out it's one of those things where I just don't like the album. I don't like An Innocent Man. I don't like that album.
Oh.
And I don't like River of Sighs.
Okay.
Other than that, it turns out I like a lot of Billy Joel.
Yeah. Those two albums are just, I mean, they're just okay. I mean, literally, An Innocent Man is him. He is a monkey throwing things at a wall.
Right?
It's grim. It's some of them have a good beat, but they're gross.
Oh, that's Uptown Girl.
Yeah.
And I just,
the longest. Oh.
That's the number one. That's my number one. Like, I want to murder him.
Right. Well, it's because it's this homage to his own childhood, and you're like, stop. Stop touching
it.
Yourself. Nobody wants to watch this. And but
everybody, here's the weird thing. Everybody wanted to watch it.
Everybody
that album was humongous.
Because of MTV, though. I think that MTV made him some sort of weirdo star because Christie Brinkley. And then I remember in college reading an unauthorized biography of Billy Joel.
Oh, somebody behind the scenes writing.
Right, where it was just about the love story. But it was older because he had broken up with Christie Brinkley and was then going out with a woman who was 12 years younger than Christie Brinkley that looked exactly like Christie Brinkley, which made you want to bury him headfirst in the sand and paint his feet with honey and then call ants.
Yes.
But it was so furious. But I love Cold Spring Harbor,
yeah,
which was one of his first album. It was
That's
after,
his first one, isn't it?
That is his first one, but he had a band before that called... I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
But Cold Spring Harbor is one of my favorite albums of his.
Yes.
And then I really enjoy Street Life Serenader a great deal. And Nylon Curtain. I've been listening to Nylon Curtain actually for the last 6 months, almost on nonstop.
Really? Is that the one with the...
Saigon.
Dun, dun.
It's got Saigon and Allentown.
Panic, or what's the name of that
Pressure.
Song?
Pressure.
It's on there.
Yeah, that's on there. That's not one of my favorites, but it has a... Scandinavian Skies on it, and it's got Laura. It's interesting, and I love his saxophone playing. He's got that guy, Anthony or Tony or whatever. I don't know the name of the band.
Yeah, some guy from Jersey who also plays a musical instrument.
He's a guy, maybe Long Island you might have met him from. So, yeah.
You know what my big problem is with Billy Joel, and it's not even his fault?
What?
It's...
His alcoholism?
No.
That's not...
Live your life, enjoy yourself. It, and you know this is a comic going to one-nighters like we did in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the comedy show, and then the dance floor would open, and then eventually, usually most one-nighters were in a college town.
Okay.
You know, at least back then.
That's a pretty nice one-nighter. I was doing some Best Western Four Wall in it somewhere in the middle of
But there
nowhere.
Was a college nearby.
Right, there might have been a college nearby.
Inevitably... And by the way, I would stay there until they told me to leave because I was a drunk.
Okay.
Inevitably, Piano Man would come on.
Oh, yeah.
And every college frat idiot, they would join arms. And this happened nationwide.
Right.
And they would sing along to Piano Man.
Right.
And it's like, you're 20.
Yeah.
You can't relate to this fucking song at all.
Yeah.
And it would infuriate me.
I have more
me.
In common with this, and I'm 24.
I'm more because I'm an entertainer who
right.
sadly just performed here.
Right.
And everybody's going, you were great. Why are you here? Like, we literally lived that song.
Right.
And it would infuriate me to watch these college kids who are
right.
there getting drunk, and then they're going to go do homework and go to class.
Yeah.
Thinking they can relate to this 40-year-old guy hashing out the key.
Right, who just had his entire life stolen from him, which
right?
is why he's working at an LAX piano bar.
Right?
Yeah.
You can't relate to that. So stop it.
Right.
So I took all that out
reading
on Billy Joel.
Oh, fair enough. Because they were also, I took it out on Kerouac, because I was like, because they're also reading Kerouac and Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, of course they are.
And Bukowski, and you're like,
yeah.
You're none of those people. You are absolutely, I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
It's all working out, you and your suburban life, and you don't even have any student loans. I can't even sympathize.
You know, it's funny you say that. You bring that up. I listen to Sirius XM.
Okay.
And Raw Dog 99 is one of the channels I listen to. And
because they do the stand-up.
Yeah, stand-up comedy. So I would I will bounce around on the channels. And Bill Hicks, who, you know, I loved.
Pioneer.
Pioneer, great, phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm going to get a lot of hipsters pissed off at me for saying this. This will be considered, if I can quote Phil Hendry, blasphemy. I would say at that time in his life, 8 out of 10 jokes would be, well, I read a book.
Right.
Like it was a lot of, you know, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you guys are making movies out there? I'm in New York. You know what we're doing here? Reading.
Yes.
Oh, look at him. He's a read. Like, Jesus Christ. We get it, Bill. You're smart. You're better than everybody.
You're the smarty Magoo.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is what I never listened to stand-up comedy.
Oh.
As a child. We're Zig Ziglar. A lot of sell the sizzle, not the steak. And so there was no stand-up comedy until I started doing stand-up comedy. And I didn't even know who Lenny Bruce was.
How did you... Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
And this is not about the band Chicago. And I'm mad that we're this far off
topic. Exactly.
By the way,
we've waited. No.
You... How does one get into stand-up comedy if they're not into stand-up comedy?
One accidentally goes to a stand-up comedy club and realizes that you can drink there for free. And I heckled. That was my first. I was the biggest nightmare, right? I was a woman heckler, drunk woman heckler. Sam Kinison was the first comic I ever saw live, and I heckled him. Yeah.
Oh, and
how'd that go?
Sam enjoyed women in the audience.
Yeah, he loved women in the audience. And he's having the shittiest set of his life, by the way.
Where was this at?
It was Bill Kinison owned the club, Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay.
1984, 1985,
1984. So right when Sam was...
Right before he blew up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. He was about to do Letterman, and he was coked up and... drunk at the same time, because that's what you want to be. You want to sort of find the right...
Yeah, even it out.
And I was in the front row of this dirtbag. It was the State Street Infirmary on State Street in Madison, owned by Gus, the guy who owns the club in Madison now.
Really?
He owned that building.
Wow.
And State Street Infirmary, pool hall, Coke front. Underneath it, Comedy Cellar, owned by Bill Kinison. And the only people he could get to come... were, because remember, this is supposedly the golden era. This is the boom, right? He would, Bill Kinison would pay $250 plus airfare, and you stayed in a shitty apartment for a week of stand-up comedy. So I went to a show. For some reason, I'm 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
We go to the comedy club. We're sitting there. It literally had to be the first time I was out in public. I had been told that every time somebody brings you a drink, you tip them a dollar. So
no, I don't. That's not. I don't.
That is not
crazy.
The rule. It is not crazy, but it's not at a comedy club. You run a tab.
Yeah, run a tab.
And then you tip. So I would every time she would bring me a drink, I'd give her a dollar. She was back every two.
Oh, of course, yeah.
She was like, so I was hammered beyond redemption. Kinison's having a hard set because he's shit-faced. And so there's a pause, and I blurt something out that you cannot understand. I believe he said, I am from Peoria, and then waited too long, and I said, so I'm sorry. I know. Making me the worst human being on the planet, by the way.
Not only are you a drunk female heckler,
mm-hmm.
you said, like, just generic 101.
Oh, yeah.
Guy that like
every time someone heckles me, by the way,
you hear that
I have to take a moment and go, oh, this is payback.
Yeah,
payback, asshat.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
and that's the worst. Like that's the equivalent.
Because there's no response.
That's the equivalent to, in my opinion, next. and then remember we went through the phase of not
right,
which there's no comeback to that because mm-hmm. they're like literally negating everything you just said.
Yep.
Which, by the way, of course it's not. That's comedy.
Right. There's going to be a twist. Turns out if you were to wait two fucking seconds, there might have been a punchline that you would have enjoyed. Yes.
Those are the ones that always drove me nuts. I'm sorry. And I have a very specific time I remember in my head of an audience member saying that, and I want to throttle them.
Right.
Next, and then not. Mm-hmm. Those were the three. And then although one time one guy, this happened one time in my life, and I then was like, well, I got to have something prepared. Some guy yelled out, nice forehead. And I was like, I didn't know what to say back to it. So then, of course, I was like, well, if that ever happens again, I'm going to, it's like, I got to assume you're describing the VCR at your house, sir. like just this convoluted thing. And that happened in 1990.
Right.
Nobody's ever yelled out nice forehead again.
Again. Right. Well,
because
that's
why
the biggest,
would they?
That's the biggest. When you plan for the thing that's never going to happen again is fucking hilarious. Pardon me.
Well, the one thing I did have to do is I would always get stand up because I'm not the tallest guy.
Right.
And so dumb. You know, a guy who feels a little emasculated because his girlfriend's laughing at me or his wife is laughing and like, oh, she doesn't find me funny and she finds this guy funny.
Right.
That's always
they have to yell.
Yeah. Well, why don't you stand up? And then so after maybe three or four times of that happening, I used to open my show by literally within two sentences mentioning my height in a subtle way.
Yeah.
So that when that happened, I would go, right, we covered that in the first second I was up here,
exactly.
sir.
Exactly.
Then that guy's stupid audience on my side.
Yeah. But the preemptive, it's a preemptive strike. Comedy is a lot like Iraq.
Oh, it's personal.
They're the enemy until you have them on your side. One of the worst, when I first started doing stand up, it was because I would occasionally get fat comments and it wasn't, and there was nothing to be done. There's the worst time, hilariously, in retrospect, very funny, but an entire group of frat guys chanting lose weight at me. Which is brutal.
Brutal.
But you just like, all you can do is go, I believe at this entire, it was a debacle. I started making fun of their girlfriends because I didn't know what else to do.
Right.
And which the girlfriend started whipping popcorn bags at me. And, it was bad. It wasn't the greatest
bad choice.
Show. It wasn't a great show. So what I just did is I looked at my watch and I said, another 7 minutes, they have to pay me the $75. This was in the first year of doing stand-up comedy. Yeah. And, but the thing is that was saved because some guy in the front row offered me a joint and he goes, it'll be fine. Here, have this. And I said, I love this college. And, and then we moved on. But, there's so, but the woman, that's how I went to the comedy show and the manager came up to me after I would not shut up because it's the worst, right?
Yes.
Women, even as a woman comic and there's women in the audience yelling, for some reason, the audience is still on her side.
They're on their side. unless they are being a complete
and utter tool.
To it, like, where it's like, you can't, and people don't understand that it's like, you should have ripped her apart. You can't.
You can't until it's bad.
Yes.
Until,
because if it's got to really be bad, or else you just look like a bully.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you have a microphone and you are not drunk.
And they're just a little gal.
Right.
They're just a little gal after all.
Yeah, they're just trying to have a good time.
Right.
Why you got to be so, well, because I'm working.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. And then, but the crazy, so the guy, the manager actually came up to me and told me to shut it. And he actually, when he told me to shut up, he actually said, open mic is on Sunday.
Ah!
And literally.
And he was being a dick.
Yes. But 2 weeks later, I came back and did open
Sunday.
Mic. Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
That's how it happened.
And that's funny because I actually say that to audience members. Like when they try to be funny, I go,
yeah.
Open mic's on Sundays.
Right.
Is that what it is, guys? Open mic on Sundays around here? So come back and sign up, sir, because it sounds like you got a good start.
Right. And then it was like heroin. So, So 6-7 months later, somebody mentioned Lenny Bruce, and I was like, who's that?
Right.
And I was literally belittled. And then I went off and bought an album, and it was lovely. And Lenny Bruce is very funny. But the thing is I think Bill Hicks, to even get back to whatever we were talking about, is that Hicks has been hacked so bad.
Yes.
That when you try to go back and listen to Hicks, having never heard Hicks, it's hard to do it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. I bought Dangerous on a cassette.
Okay.
And I remember telling Paul Gilmartin on a golf course, hey, have you heard this guy Bill Hicks? And I only bought it because I was on the road all the time and
right.
I would just go to buy
anything
to kill. So other than listening to Dr. Laura and Rush, Limbaugh across the country.
Right as you drove.
Right. And because there wasn't satellite radio yet.
Yep.
So we got, and luckily you drive in the afternoon. And it's weird as it sounds, it's luckily because I'm not a fan and will never be a fan of Rush Limbaugh. But he would be on. And if you drove across the country, every station had him on.
Yeah.
So you never lost that.
You never. Yeah.
So you got to hear his entire show and it killed 4 hours.
Right.
But I bought Bill Hicks and I remember thinking this guy is phenomenal. This is a genius. And then, you're right. Then it became a little hackneyed. Not his fault.
Not his fault at all.
But,
because he was breaking ground.
Yes.
But he was the first guy who said, who talked about porn.
Right.
And when people would get on his case, he'd be like, I am not alone.
Right.
You know, I am. And then everybody started. And now.
Well, if you don't talk about porn, something's wrong.
Right. And so, but it's so funny because my romance novel bit is a little bit of an homage to that. Because when I mention that I read an occasional romance novel, the audience shuts the fuck down. And I say out loud, which is possibly stealing his joke, but also I don't think so, is that I am not alone. In reading romance
novels.
Yeah,
yeah.
I am not sustaining a $1 billion industry by myself. And I had never heard that joke until recently.
Then,
And I was like, oh shit, did I accidentally steal that joke? And I was like, well.
I don't think you did.
I don't think I did, and I don't care.
Parallel thinking.
That's all.
Now. True or false?
Yes.
Before we go back to Chicago?
Yes.
My first time ever at a comedy club, I heckled as well.
Oh, really?
No, true or false?
Oh, that's right. It's an actual. I gotta say false.
No, it's true.
Did you as well?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't tell you how psyched I am to hear that.
The comedian was a guy named Ricky Connor, who is no longer with us. And he was doing a bit about, I don't remember the bit, but it was about breasts.
Okay.
And he was
for
doing.
For or against, huh? Boom. I'm here all week.
What did you say?
For or against.
I think he was for them.
Okay. All right.
And he was up there doing the thing, African-American gentleman.
Yep.
And then it was getting laughs, and then he just kept going and going and going. And then eventually it's silent and he goes, I said, and then it was like, and the audience was almost kind of turning against him because it was going on without a laugh.
Right.
And then he said, oh, did I go too far on this? breast joke? And I go, yeah, I think you're milking the tit joke.
Ooh.
Place went freaking nuts.
Right, because you essentially tagged the...
I tagged his joke for him.
Yeah.
I tagged his joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friends were like, yeah, man, that's why you got to do this, man. That's right. Why you got to be a comic. Right. Because I had gone to this club to watch. It was either the first night I did an open mic, which was after the show, or it was the week prior.
Right.
Where it was like I went to investigate it.
Right.
Because I remember I was sitting in a booth with my friends. But it was like, this is why, Jimmy, this is why you got to do this, man. This is why you got to do it. And then, of course, now, 26 years later, hey, prick, shut your mouth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Though when I have, we've all been in that situation, though, when somebody says something in the audience that tags it that is hilarious, and all you can do is go touche.
Well, you have to.
3 points.
Now, early on in my career, though, in fact, it was Larry Wilmore that gave me this advice.
Okay.
Because I was...
that guy's a good comic. I like Larry Wilmore a great deal.
And he's a great television producer, and he's got a lot of great ideas. And
I'm going to take a stand, folks. Larry Wilmore, good guy.
He's doing okay. Out.
I like Larry.
I was working in Indianapolis with him, and it was that where it's like, you know, I mean, I've now found exactly how to deal with an audience, and, and that's I've made my living doing it.
It rarely occurs,
But at the time, it's like I would almost go fishing for hecklers.
Okay.
So that I could make them look stupid.
Okay.
That was kind of what I was doing.
Yep.
I didn't know I was doing that.
Right.
But I was doing that.
Right.
And then sure enough, same deal. One time a guy, blah, blah, blah. I might have even been struggling.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah. Oh, you're stupid, sir. He says something back. It got a big laugh. And then it was like, go fuck yourself. And I went nuts. And then afterwards, Larry goes, you know, they're not always stupid. They're not always wrong. And it was like, I'd only been doing comedy. This was maybe 91.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, what is that, a year and a half, 2 years at the most.
Right.
And it was like, wow, that may be the best piece of advice, even to this day, that I was ever given. Because it's like, I mean, obviously I would have found it out, figured it out myself.
Right.
But it was like, just
it's nice to have been, just laugh.
Just laugh.
Just give it to him.
Just give it to him, because then you look like you're having fun. You're in on it.
Yes.
And you don't have to... For lack of a better word, you don't have to win everything.
Right.
You could be part of it. You're there together.
Yeah. It's a group. It's a group.
But you know, early on, as a comedian, on, though, you're afraid. Like, well, if that guy gets a laugh, I'm not going to get rebooked.
Right.
Well, that guy in the audience got a bigger laugh than I did. The owner saw that. You know, all the bullshit that goes through our heads when we first
start. Right, the committee meeting that's being held.
I say, like that phrase.
Yeah, that's...
I had the committee meeting to Bobby Lamb.
Yeah.
Bobby Lamb.
And so what I'm... The only thing I'm willing to do recently, I've decided, is that makes the committee meeting even acceptable, is that I only read abridged minutes. Nobody needs to hear the whole minutes.
Funny.
It's, that's... As long as I keep it abridged, keep it tight, I'm not going to lose friends.
I have to go back to Chicago for a minute.
Yep. Please do.
Because
now's
of this.
The time. We got.
I forgot
this.
About Lou Pardini.
You didn't.
Lou Pardini replaced Bill Champlin about 6 years ago.
What does he play, Lou Pardini?
Keyboards and sings, and he's a great vocalist.
And
a
that
great
was the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he is phenomenal, and I will tell you this.
Younger man? 60s?
No, probably 50s.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Maybe low 60s, but I have seen Chicago since 1981.
How many times? More than 10.
75?
Holy crap. 100? All right. 100 times.
I used to say it was 100. I don't think that's accurate or even realistic.
Right.
But it's between 50 and 75.
Okay.
If they came to Chicago, and they used to come and do 3 nights at a venue, I would go all 3 nights.
Oh, my gosh.
I was that guy.
Okay.
Like in 86.
Just to see different sets.
Nope.
They
wouldn't do different sets.
No.
I would just go because I'm the biggest Chicago fan in the world. And,
okay.
And
you're wearing a shirt.
I wore it in honor.
In honor. You're wearing a nice baseball shirt.
I didn't know if you took a photograph for the website. So I wore a Chicago shirt.
Well, now I'm going to.
But no, I didn't. The idea that a Chicago concert could be going on in my town and I'm not at it was not even.
Right.
Like that was, I was going.
Right. Yeah, okay.
You know, like I went to see them with my dad, took me once, and because I wasn't able to drive.
Right.
And then, you know, I saw him at Chicago Fest Forever, where I would see the matinee and the nighttime show.
Okay.
One time, Gary Shera and I, our friends did not want to stay for the late show.
Okay.
And so they were our ride, and Gary and I were like, we'll figure out a way home. So we walked around Soldier Field, you know, where they play football.
Yeah.
We walked around going, is anybody going to Oak Forest? Is anybody going to Oak Forest? And a guy goes, I'm going, but I don't have, you can sit in the back of the pickup. Okay.
That's fine.
So we drove, you know, which is against the law now.
Right, right.
And probably was then.
I doubt it.
But we sat in the back of this.
I think as long as you guys were wearing leashes that were real tight.
I don't think we were wearing any sort of leashes.
So you didn't jump out.
I probably had 9 Chicago shirts on because I had to buy every souvenir as well.
Do you still have many Chicago shirts?
You know what happened, Jackie?
What happened?
Here's how effing nuts Jimmy Pardo is.
How it?
My mom moved 3 years ago.
Okay.
From Oak Forest, my childhood. My high school. We moved there in 80 for high school, and my mom lived there until 3 years ago.
Okay.
When she moved, there was a box of all my old Chicago and all concert t-shirts that I put on eBay and made a gazillion dollars.
Oh, that's hilarious. You know what? That is shrewd.
Then.
You bought them all back.
Bought them all back.
You didn't.
No, I obviously.
You bought different. Wow.
All the ones that I sold, I then went, you know what? I liked that shirt. And I went on eBay and I rebought every one of those shirts like an a-hole.
This is a beautiful story. This is a story that I think we can all learn from in the Dork Forest.
Save your souvenirs. save your. But the idea of, like, I saw what the prices were going for.
Yeah.
On eBay, I was like, well, I can, and I did. I made a lot because I was selling t-shirts from 81, 82, 83 that weren't on eBay, the Chicago ones. So all these Chicago fans that were either new fans or new collectors. Lost, oh my God, I can get the Chicago 16 tour shirt, you know, $175.
Holy.
Like, I mean, I was making
bank.
And then I eventually went back and bought them all. And, and they're ill fitting.
Right?
I can't wear them. I just have them now. It's like.
Right. You got to create a diorama of the people you most admire. Is what you got to do. Shadow boxes.
Shadow boxes.
Yeah. That'd be a.
Which was a big hit by Andy Gibb.
I had that album.
Shadow Dancing.
It's the first album, the first concert I ever went to. REO Speedwagon.
What year? Give me the year and I'll tell you who opened.
Okay.
Maybe.
81.
No, I can't tell you who opened.
At the World Series of Rock. In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at County Stadium.
Oh, so there was like 5 bands on that show.
Oh, yeah. April Wine.
Joan Jett.
April Wine.
April Wine. And Triumph.
Nope. It was April Wine.
April Wine's
and
a Canadian
one other,
band.
One other band. There were 3 bands.
And then REO, because they were in 81, they were at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, they were. And I went just because a friend of mine was like, we're going to go see this band. And I was like, I don't know what that band is. And then I knew every song.
Of course.
And then, that was a crazy, and it was, and we each had a beer and a half. I think I was 14. And then I saw Heart that same year.
Wow.
It was a big concert year for me.
Yeah.
I don't like live music, it turns out.
Oh, is that true?
It's loud.
I
like it in album form in my vehicle.
I will go to any concert.
Okay.
If I'm available.
Right.
And that's not true. I was just invited to one and I'm not going. And it was hard to say no. I will tell you that. I love
live music.
Concerts. I love them. And
okay.
I think a lot of
what do you love
it,
about them?
I think it's nostalgia.
Okay.
I think it's the feeling I used to get as a kid waiting in line, like sleeping out overnight to buy Journey tickets.
Okay.
Or sleeping out overnight to buy Triumph, as I mentioned.
And you got to sleep out overnight when you were a kid.
Oh, yeah, out in front of Sears at Orland Square.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we would sleep outside and, you know, and it was a neat party. Like, I didn't do drugs or anything.
Yeah.
Or drink, even.
Right.
But everybody else was.
Right.
But somebody would put a boombox. If it's Journey, we listen to Journey for 9 hours.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? From midnight to 9 a.m., we listened to Journey.
Well, that's really cool.
And then we'd
all
buy our ticket. It was a great. So I remember all of that. So going to concerts to me is basically that, bringing
it's
all that
community.
Back.
And that's what that is. That's awesome.
That's community.
Jimmy Pardo, this has been a treat. We are done.
We have 4 minutes if you want.
Well, if we want, we have 3 minutes.
Okay.
I got 3, actually.
All right.
All right. How would you like summation? Well, first of all, we got to tell people Podcastathon, live streaming at nevernotfunny.com.
Right.
Never Not Funny, your weekly podcast on Earwolf.
Yes.
With Mr. Matt Belknap.
Yes. Oh, and on Podcastathon, it's me, Matt Belknap, and Pat Francis.
Yep.
And the 3 of us are there for all 12 hours.
All 12 hours.
We are there for 12 hours. We have a different guest every half hour.
Every half hour,
I can tell you confirmed at this time, our Weird Al Yankovic.
Nice.
Jason Thompson from General Hospital.
Okay.
You know, Scott Aukerman, Paul F. Tompkins.
Okay.
I'm forgetting one other, Sarah Silverman.
Okay.
And there's others, but those are the only ones I can remember at the time. Rich Summer from Mad Men.
Okay. Oh, he's great. He's been on the Dork Forest talking
games.
Yeah, that is a board game man.
Yes, he is.
He's a man of
board
game.
And I'm going to say, on the record, away from my show,
mm-hmm.
there are about five people in this world that they're my favorite people.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like, and Rich Sommer is one of them.
Oh, he's a...
Dave Holmes is another.
Okay.
Have you had Dave Holmes on?
I haven't. He's a... No reason not to.
You should have him on to talk about 80s music and 90s music.
Okay.
He is great.
Okay. Well, then I will. Dave Holmes.
He is great.
Dave, if you're listening, Jackie@JackieCation.com. Email me.
I should tell you this. He does not care for you, so he's probably not listening. You know what? I made a mistake even bringing it up. But yeah, November 28th, Parkcast-a-thon, we are raising money for Smile Train. Last year, we raised $144,000. Our goal is to beat that. We are close to raising...
$144,000? That sounds gross. Anyway, boom, ladies and gentlemen.
Whoa, that's a nice piece of business, Jackie Kashan.
Yeah. And then JimmyPardo.com, if people want to see you do stand-up comedy out of your joke hole... What if they want to do that? Is it, you got tour stuff on Jimmy Pardo?
Yeah, I do, but I don't really have a lot coming up. I've got Flappers in Burbank at the beginning of December.
Excellent. I'm there Thanksgiving weekend myself.
I'm there, I think it's the week after that.
Right after that. Excellent.
And then I don't have anything till the end of January. The name of the place is Wise Guys in Salt Lake City.
Oh, there you go. I think I'm there in March.
Which, it's one of my favorite clubs.
Trolley Square. The other one?
No, the other one, which I prefer.
I like Trolley Square. So look at us liking all of Salt Lake City.
I don't like Trolley Square. I don't like the people that go to that particular show.
They're very nice to me. They're very lovely. I don't like the nachos.
That's interesting.
Interesting life choices. Here's the good news.
Yeah.
People get to go wherever they want to go, man.
That is the good news, brother. let me say this.
Yeah.
Again, if you just want to dip your feet in the water with Chicago,
yep.
They have a new 40th anniversary best of that kind of encapsulates all 40 years, obviously.
That's hilarious.
And it's got
awesome.
It's got the Warner Brother years, which are the 80s and 90s, where everybody kind of shrugs them off.
Yeah.
And then it's got the stuff from the 70s. So you get the best of both worlds.
Okay.
That's a great place to start, but if you want to be the guy that says, no, I want to immediately jump into albums.
Yeah.
CTA, I mean, they literally started with the best.
Okay.
And then Chicago 2 is great. Chicago 5 is great. I think Chicago 16 and 17 are great.
1, 2, 5, 16, and 17.
And then Hot Streets and 13 and 14, which are, hang on, those are the bastard child.
Yeah.
Those are the ones, like, everybody's like, oh, those are the worst albums ever made.
Mm-hmm.
There's great stuff on there as well.
What about 9?
9's our greatest hits.
Okay. you might also want to look into 20.
1 and 2, 22. Maybe 3.
I don't know if you've 4. Ever, have you tried 6? I don't know. They're all good. Anyway.
Well, they're not.
They're not.
I mean, there's shit on every album.
Oh, sure. But here's the thing about an album. I say 4 good songs, that's a hell of an album.
You're going to do better than that here. You're going to do better than that with most of these.
All right.
Some you won't. Some you won't.
Ladies, Rangers, yeah, we have listened to a good solid 40 minutes about Chicago,
mm-hmm.
And I think that we've...
And I didn't even get into it. I didn't even dork out as much as I could have.
We've grown. I think we've grown as people.
As America.
Well, Foreigners, let me just tell you.
Foreigners?
Well, not the band Foreigner. I'm just saying that we have some overseas listeners. They've also grown as Americans. But what I have this to say, thank you so much for listening. Rangers, you know the rules. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?